Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, and welcome to The Man's Voice. We will have lots of fun tonight. Those of you that are listening, remember, if you'd like to call in and join in the conversation, there is a direct line. You can call me at 646-668-8740. Panel from all over the United States, all on the board, ready to talk about conversations. And I'm going to let everyone jump in, because I'm going to start a conversation. I'm going to throw out a lot of topics tonight that have to deal with the relationships, those kinds of things. But I want to start off by asking the panel a question, and that is, define the words spiritual consciousness. I think that as men today, to run our families, to run our businesses, to run our lives, there should be some type of spiritual consciousness. That's my point of view. But let's hear from the panel. What do you think? What do you think, Ron? How would you define that?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. We can hear you.
Okay. To me personally, I would define that as that's actually a tough one, but I don't know, a sense of belonging and a sense of believing in a higher power.
But do you think people should think about that on a daily basis? Do you think it should be coming from us as we move through life, or do you think that it's something that is a Sunday thing, or is it something that we expect from each other?
I think it's something that comes from within, and I think it's something that is natural to a person. I mean, you don't really necessarily learn how to be spiritual. I think it's actually also comes with maturity and with age. I mean, I would say that, and maybe I'm wrong, but I would say that most young people who define themselves as spiritual and spiritual consciousness, they may be, but as they get older, you know, life starts to take on new meanings, and you start thinking about life differently. And your meaning and the meaning of life and your place in it. So I think it's an evolutionary thing as you get older.
What do you think, Bruce?
I agree with you, Ron, on a lot of what you said, probably almost all of what you said. I would add to it that I tend to look at the people, nature, the world around me, and I find myself, and maybe because, as you said, Ron, the older we get, maybe the more consciousness you're aware of. I look at all those things and wonder. I find the older I get, the more wonderment I have in the whole higher power, God, whatever form that higher power takes for you individually. And how that relates to my daily life. I've got a very wonderful daughter of mine that she and I have a lot of conversations about that, and she's about half my age, so she's a good foil for me, so to speak, to have a very healthy and great dialogue about why I, in particular, don't think everything happened by happenstance. I don't see it as a Big Bang theory. I see it more as a something that was, for the most part, very well planned and interrelated. I, for the life of me, I'm in wonder on how everything relates and connects to it. And I also wonder in all of that, and then I'll hush up, why at times it appears the relationship between humans sometimes is the toughest one to figure out, maybe because we were given the power of reason, where a lot of things are instinct. But so I feel I'm very spiritual and conscious of that in my daily life.
What about you, Mr. Wiggins?
Well, in my younger years, I used to live my life on feelings and emotion. And feelings and emotion have nothing to do with spirituality. I am a firm believer, after many mistakes and wisdom and knowledge growing in spirituality, that we are a triangle. Three parts. We're spirits. We have a soul, which is your mind, your emotion, and your intellect, and we live in a body. And when I learned that, it let me know that I am to focus more on my spirit man, more so than my soul man. My soul man will curse you out, depending on how I feel that day. And the flesh man just go with whoever's winning, whoever's leading, whoever's winning. So I have to stay in the spirit. I don't always achieve it on a day-to-day basis, but I'm very conscious of it because that man controls everything in my book.
Well, good conversation, but let me ask you a question. As we talk about this, can a man and woman be friends, or does a man and woman, because I know that some people say that men and women cannot be friends, and some men don't allow their wives to associate with men. But what do you feel about, and what age does that count? Can a boy be a friend to a girl? Can a teenager or a 20-year-old be a friend to a girl? Can your spouse or significant others be friends to the opposite sex? Give me some comments on that, Bruce.
Well, I absolutely think you can. I've lived it in all the phases of my life. I've had female friends all along the way. And I have not really found it a problem to separate it. I mean, if I'm hearing your inclination a little bit that it's for some reason we're not strong enough as men, or we're not wired in the right way, that we can't have a female friend without physical and that kind of attraction. Well, you absolutely can. I can see some women that I am good friends with as just that, friends, and nothing more than that. And I would be shocked if most of us could not do that.
What about you, Mr. Wiggins?
Oh, certainly, Dave. I can have, in fact, I really value that relationship that I have with an older woman. I look at her as a woman of wisdom in my life. And she's older than I am, but I communicate. And we don't have sexual connections or sexual thoughts. And then I also have a younger one that keeps me abreast of things that are happening. And, of course, my wife, we talk quite often. And but I do have an older wife and a younger when it comes to female relations, yes. Sound kind of strange?
No, not at all.
No. I personally couldn't agree more with both of you. I mean, in fact, I tend to think that friendships are more important in one's life than relationships. I mean, relationships, unfortunately, a lot of times come and go. I wish that weren't the case. But you stay friends. And so, and sometimes friends are forever. You know, there's a saying that some people come into your life just once. You know, some come into your life for a short period of time. But the good friends, you know, stay in your life forever. So, and I absolutely don't see any problem whatsoever with men and women being best of friends. And, you know, I've had women that have been my best friends, and I think that's part of life, really.
All right. I want to introduce the panel to a new member of the panel. His name is Jesse Wallace. He is a student at Michigan State University. Jesse, why don't you introduce yourself?
All right.
Say hello.
As David said, my name is Jesse Wallace.
How old are you, Jesse? 25. Okay, that's you'll be the baby of this group right now. But we were just discussing, can men and women be friends, just friends, or does there have to be a relationship issue? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I feel men and women can be friends. But if a person's married, you know, there has to be certain boundaries, you know, because
wait a minute. You're saying that a married woman cannot be friends to a single male?
They can. But I mean, it has to you have to establish boundaries. Because jealousy will occur, you know, because for instance, me and my one girl, best friend. You know, we've had some issues. She's been married to her husband 20 years, and there has been jealousy. You know, because for whatever reason, he's getting more attention or this and that. So you just have to establish boundaries.
All right. That's fine. So for those of you that might be listening, remember the call in number is 646-668-8740. If you think that men and women, you have an opposite opinion of the panel that they cannot be friends, or you think they can, with caveats, call us in. Let us hear what your comments are on that. Here's another question, I think. And I was waiting for Frank to get in because I wanted to say that this storm we had on the East Coast seems to have caused a lot of issues. People lost their lives or whatever. We talked about global warming, but that doesn't sound like an issue of global warming. But the planes were cut down. I mean, they didn't have flights. Everyone was asked to stay in. So it was a very hard few days for people who lived on the East Coast. And I want to send out from us, for those people that might still be, well, if you're without power, you may not be able to listen to us, but tell people that we do have passion for those people who are stuck in or can't get out or are still buried by the snow. We hope everyone gets to be well. But we're talking about relationships a little bit, and I have a question. For the panelists, will you lie for the sake of your partner's happiness? And if you do, where do you draw the line? Where would you lie for your wife's happiness, Mr. Wiggins? And if you do, where do you draw that line?
David, I wouldn't lie for her. I'm gonna just tell you the truth. I have lied before, but I wouldn't lie for her happiness because I think the truth she'll set you free. If there's an issue, and it depends on what type of issue it is, you have to be more give me more clarity when you ask that question, because it depends on what issue it is. And I would not lie, it would be the first answer I would give. But if she's unhappy, then it's because of some circumstance, situation, person, place, or thing. And we need to get to the root of the issue, not put Band-Aid on the cancer. Let's get to the root of the issue and find out why I need to lie for you.
What about you, Ron? Would you lie for your significant other's happiness? Where would you draw the line if you say yes, or maybe it's no?
That's a really good question, and you know my first reaction is the same as Don's. It's you know, no, that I wouldn't lie, because you know I don't believe in lies, and like you said, Don, you know, the truth shall set you free. However, you know, we've all lied, and as much as we try not to lie, we've all done it, and I think if it's something that is not going to harm anybody. For example, if a friend of mine says something really really bad about my partner, and my partner asks, you know, well, what did they say about me, and it's going to hurt that person, then I would, you know, I would probably, it's a little white lie, you know, I would probably say something, I wouldn't, in other words, I wouldn't say the entire truth. Maybe I would bend it a little bit in order to protect the feelings of my partner. And again, you know, I hate to lie, and I find it, at least for me, and professionally, and, you know, work-wise and with friendships and all of that, it's easier to lie, or white lies. I shouldn't say lie, but just little white lies. I got that backwards. In my professional life, at work, and with my friends, it's easier to be 100% straight up and honesty the entire time, no matter how they take it, than it is with my partner. I don't know if that makes any sense, but maybe I didn't explain it right.
I'm understanding a while, but Jesse, would you lie to your significant other just for their happiness?
I wouldn't. I have actually, you know, I've done it. I've lied before. And then I found out I had to tell another lie to cover up that lie and, you know, just continue. So, no, I wouldn't, you know, because after a while, you know, the whole guilt thing will set in if you have a conscience. And, you know, it's not good to lie to a person that you love and cherish. Because that person, you know, you go to when times are hard and you have an issue with X, Y, and Z. So why would you lie to someone that, you know, that you love? I couldn't.
Yeah, but
hey, David.
Yes, Don.
You know, I dealt with that many times before, and when I would lie, I definitely know that I was in a state of denial. And denial simply means to me, let me break it down for you. D, don't. E, even. N, no. I am lying. Denial. And when I'm in a state of denial, eventually the truth is going to come out anyway. So if I tell a lie, like the brother just said, I got to tell another one to cover that one up. And that state of denial just prolongs the agony when it's best to just, hey, let's set it on the table. Let's tell the truth. Let's deal with it because we're human beings. We make mistakes. We're not perfect. Let's just be truthful about it. So I came out of that state of denial, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me.
What? And I agree with you, Don, and this is Bruce, but I'd also add that a very wise man, my father, a long time ago, gave me a very simple rule that I've used my entire life. You never have to remember the truth. It's always the same.
Yeah.
And so as Jesse said earlier, you know, you say one lie, then you got to say another one to cover that up. Before you know it, you're twisted up in knots, and your spouse or significant other are more upset with you because you couldn't be honest. So I've taken that level of honesty. You try to couch it as best you can. You don't want to hurt them. And you, as we've all heard, it's not about you. It's about what you did or didn't do. It's not you, the person. I'm not attacking you. Or chastising you, it's what you did or didn't do. And I think a significant other will see that as a stronger relationship because they may not like it at the moment, but they'll think about it and say, boy, you know, he or she was honest enough to really tell me the truth. And if you do it in the right way, I think it strengthens a relationship. It doesn't weaken it.
And it also strengthens your integrity.
Yes. Well put. Absolutely.
Okay,
yeah,
well.
I
go ahead, Ron.
No, I mean, I agree with what everybody's saying, but I can think of, you know, just a few instances recently in my relationship where it was better actually not to say anything. And I'll tell you what happened. You know, my partner and a friend and I, all three of us were out at Walmart. And, you know, my partner comes from a third world country and is not at the same, I hate to say social level, but financially obviously not at the same level as I am. And so while he was in another aisle, my friend was saying, you know, something which I found derogatory, you know, saying he comes from a country, they don't know, you know, what luxuries are, and he's, you know, he comes from a poor family. So, and then he overheard a little bit of it and asked me what it was all about. So, of course, I'm not going to say the truth because that's going to make him feel like less of a person. So I had to, in that case, say a little white lie, you know, because I didn't want him feeling bad that that he, you know, is in any way, and I don't think he's in any way less of a person, but I didn't want him thinking that. Does that make sense?
I think it does make sense. I'm just curious because I guess the one thing that keeps popping in my mind when you're significant others ask you if this outfit makes me look, how do you like it? And you know they spent hours and hours doing it, so you're actually going to tell them, oh, it looks like it doesn't look well on you? You guys are brave. Very brave.
Well, but don't you keep coming back, though, David, to if you out and outright lie and don't try to, you know, maybe make it as positive as you can, you're gonna trip yourself up, and that significant other person that's staring at you is gonna say, well, why didn't you tell me that in the first place?
True.
Hey, you know something, David? I'm gonna share something with you, and the other gentleman. You know, when you have a significant other wife like mine that had a prior relationship, the other gentleman used to lie. And so I don't want to be perceived as the other guy or have that tendency, because if I ever do that, she's going to have flashbacks. See, women are like elephants. They don't ever forget. And you have to always be consistent. If you're going to be a man of integrity, stick to it. But if you're going to be jellyback or slippery or loose, well, that's what she's going to expect. And then resentments come into play. And resentment is drinking poison and expecting someone else to die. So I don't want to get into that game with her. I want to be upfront, straight up. And that's what kept us together.
All right. I want to welcome Frank. Now, I know Frank is in Virginia. Frank, how was the weather there? Did you get snowed in?
Yeah, no, I didn't. What happened was we started off the day before yesterday, Friday, around noon with heavy snows, and then it stopped, and then it came back about a couple hours later. And then the next day, that evening, it rained real hard. Wind was very high. And so we ended up yesterday with icy conditions because we had more wind that came in. We have snow on the ground now, I would say probably couple inches of snow, and we did get a little snow melt today. Right now it looks like it's no precipitation out there, so we're going to be all right. I don't know what tomorrow has in store for us, but we do have some snow in some areas right now. And Richmond and Northern Virginia, of course, is different. They have a larger amount of snowfall.
Well, we're glad to hear you're okay. I was concerned that you would get snow in there or lose power or something. I know there are some people still without power. Go ahead. You okay?
I'm finished.
Oh, okay. I know that, you know, Bruce, we were talking earlier and you had some points you wanted to bring up. Why don't you jump in with some of those?
What was that, David?
No,
one
I know.
Points?
Yes.
Well, one of the things you and I touched on, and let me ask a quick question. It doesn't have to be long and detailed, but it's apropos right now. With the and then I'll answer that. With the big storm on the East Coast, gentlemen, and particularly you, Jesse, of the younger set, I've always noticed, and I find it curiously wonderful, that whenever we have a big emergency or a big catastrophe, we all drop our guards. We all almost help without question. We come to each other's aid, and we don't. And it's just like, you know, with reckless abandon, we'll do anything to help somebody. Almost, okay. Do you see that still happening? And did it happen? I think it did, from what I could see on the news. On this latest one on the East Coast. And why is that? Why do we do that, but we won't do it at all for the little things that are actually easier to do?
When you say little things, like what? I don't know.
Well, the thing you hear now is nobody holds the door for any. I mean, if you're a romantic or a gentleman, you hold the door for this. Or manners are disappearing, and this and that, and little things. Just helping somebody with a grocery cart, just the little things. Because I've often thought you can make a bigger impact on the little things because people don't expect you to help them. And if you turn around and help them on something they don't expect, it makes an even more positive mark with them, impression with them.
Okay.
And I wonder, Jesse, what do you still see that in your generation, in the younger set, that's still going on, or is that disappearing?
Well, I could say I think it's disappearing. For instance, like my parents, you know, they were born like in the 50s and late 40s. And, you know, they taught me a lot, man, still respect the elders and help out who can help. But, like, in my generation nowadays, I really don't see a lot of young people reaching out, helping people. It's pretty much, you know, if you scratch my back, I might scratch yours. You know, so I really don't see it. I also think that it really stems from, you know, social media. You know, you see a lot of different things online and what's going on, what have you. And a lot of young people that don't have mentors or have, you know, so much free time, they go on social media, watch different, you know, fights and just a bunch of ignorant things. So,
all right. Jesse, a little bit, get just a little louder. We can bring your mic up a little bit, if possible.
Yeah.
Did you hear what I was saying?
Okay, there you go. That's a lot better.
Okay, yeah, I was saying that, you know, like I said, my parents, you know, they're old school. They had me pretty much in their 40s. So, you know, they instilled a lot in me. But when I hang around friends, you know, they have younger parents, and I really don't see the same type of upbringing in them that I do in me. And I think it also has to, you know, do a lot with social media, you know, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and, you know, a lot of ranting and raging going on and fight videos and just a lot of different negative images that are really put out there. So I think it really has a lot to do with that.
All right. Just FYI, for those of you that might want to call in and join these conversations, the guest call-in number is 606-668-8740. And let me introduce, because Brent just came on board, Jesse Wallace is a new member of the panel, and he's 25 years old, so he's going to sit in and try to get us straight on what people of his age are thinking about. So, Frank, Jesse, introduce y'all. Okay.
Hey.
What about, and talking about you, Frank, what do you have to say about
this? Well, I've been in several emergencies, and they're probably ancient times for Jesse, but I've been in several emergencies here in Hampton Roads where I've actually got out of the car and pushed other cars out of the way, so, you know, because people were having difficulty driving on the expressway. and weren't making things better. I've been in a survival mode, you know, severe storm, where we've been taking off trains and made to stay at a fire station, made where the train has actually broke down way out there in no man's lands and things like that. So I think from my generation, which is much older than Jesse's, that, you know, we're inclined to go out and give a hand even to what might be considered our enemy in normal times, just because, and I grew up in that generation. That's the Alaskan way, too, which I lived up there. I was telling someone the other day that in a snow emergency, people essentially have the right to access warmth and go into business properties and things like that. You know, not to take anything, but to go in there to ensure that they're not going to die from exposure, that type of thing. So, yeah, and I'm still the generation where I get up, you know, in a bus stop. If the bus is crowded, I get up and offer that seat to someone elderly. It's hard to be more older than I am now, but so I have to get up and offer it to people that have that are not in the same physical condition that I'm in. I'm in pretty top physical condition, so I always offer my seat to someone else, even if they might be younger.
All right.
And I open doors. I open doors and all those things. But see, for me, if you're not a gentleman or you're not a person that helps another person, then that's really the sign of value and who you are, okay? You are absolutely not high on the food chain, in my opinion, if you don't show those particular traits.
But do you find those traits generational? Is that a generational thing? Because I think we were, as we grew up from our generation, told that was the way you had to be. As we move along, I don't see it carried over like that. So isn't that it was generational and the new generation won't think like that? Because now women, I see young girls don't expect it. When I grew up, they did expect it. Women would stand by the door and you would be in your car, starting up the car, and you look out the window and the lady would not have gotten the car. Now, for the guys,
yeah,
get around.
Let me be very straightforward with this. You know, some people may consider me a liberal, but in the military where I've come from, I would probably be considered on the ultra-conservative side. So you're not going to get advanced. You're not going to get promoted. You're not going to get picked for special assignment if you are not a person of high character. You cannot have high character unless you exhibit those qualities that we would expect a gentleman to exhibit. And I don't know. So if you come from a deficient background where your parents have not provided you that, then we're willing to help you and show you what you need to do. Or, of course, you can go to any manual and understand Emily Post or someone else and understand those courtesies we expect you to exhibit not only to your fellow person at your dinner table, at your church, your synagogue, when you're walking down the street. And those are standards that I'm looking for in an individual, and I will not associate with you, even if you're a relative, if you don't exhibit those type of qualities. You know, where you, I had a relative one time, we're in Vegas, I had all the drinks, and the relative was very rude to the lady that was serving us because he didn't like his drink. And I mean, I just decided to retire for the evening because it was just an impossible situation for me to believe that an individual, instead of being courteous, was very rude and wasn't paying for anything. I called his mother. He's my nephew, so I called his mother and basically told her that she did a very poor job. Okay, so I was going to tell you. I hate to tell you that way, but that's what it is for me.
Do we think that people that don't exhibit those traits or aren't bringing them forward anymore, no matter what age they are, do we think it's because they consciously don't want to, or they haven't been taught that's a admirable quality, or is it something to do with the IT world now that is becoming less and less emotion
driven. It's there's not less and less human contact. What do you gentlemen think? What do you think, Jesse?
Well, I agree with you. I would say, you know, because how technology has advanced, you know, we are becoming less and less tangible to each other. That's really my view on it. But I, you know, and kind of going back to what we were just talking about, I think that, you know, it's not just the young people because, you know, a lot of old people, they're kind of cranky as well.
Yeah, you're right.
For instance, I was at a grocery store and I had, you know, this elderly lady, she was following behind me and I pulled out the cart for her. And do you know, she just took the cart and didn't say thank you or anything. So, you know, it's all over. It's all over. And, you know, I look at a person and that acts like that. I don't just automatically judge them or them. You know, I just kind of say, you know, they must be having a bad day or, you know, probably something going on in their personal life, a lot on their mind. So pretty much, you know, us as humans, we want to attack, you know, and go after the person. But, you know, you kind of got to look at the big picture and say, hey, it is what it is. It ain't what it ain't.
So is it more the fiber of your being, being a good person, or you had parents or someone that taught you that at some point in your life?
You know, I get my parents. I most definitely can count my parents. They really instilled a lot in me. And also personal experiences, you know, because the type of work I do, I work with people with brain injuries. And, you know, just, you know, sometimes reading their profiles and seeing their backgrounds, you know, and seeing what they experience, you know, both parents molesting them. You know, you kind of have compassion towards a person. So, you know, we all have a story, and, you know, we all experience things in life. So, you know, I live life like it's a carnival. You know, you have your up moments, you have your down moments, but you got to make the best of it. You have to.
This is Frank again. So, in summary, for me is that to be a great person, you gotta be courteous to other people, and you have to show difference to people that are older than you as well. And so, I'm very much a traditional in those roles right there. And to have people like you. And to be important to them, I think those are just the type of qualities that you need to exhibit as often. I don't think you necessarily need a thank you response for what you're doing for someone else. I think that you just make it a habit of doing it, and it shows that you have a significant character. You just don't be rude to other people.
I agree with that, Frank, and sometimes your reward of doing the right thing is how you feel inside, irrespective of what they do.
You want to keep yourself feeling large, and to do that, you help people. You're courteous to people. You know, if you find someone that needs your assistance, you provide that assistance to them. If you find somebody that you don't even like, that's in a troubled spot, you help that person, and you don't expect them to even congratulate you or thank you. You just do what you're supposed to do as a human being. And sometimes that means jumping in the water and pulling them out of the water or keeping them from getting themselves in a financial situation that's obviously going to provide ruin to them. So you provide that advice. Now, whether they follow it, that's another thing.
Yeah.
And if you don't do that, I don't understand why someone would want to be in the same room with someone that didn't do that. And so one of the things you're looking at right today are politicians, possibly, that, you know, I've seen some speeches that, let's say, one politician gave, could be the president, and then someone else shouted something during that part of the speech that was very rude. All right, so if you go back and look at all the articles that have been written on exhibiting good qualities, hollering at someone while they're giving a speech is not exhibiting the type of qualities that makes someone endear themselves to you.
That's the truth. David, do you want me to bring up that one point that one of the points that we talked about? Are you there, David?
I think we lost David.
Well, let me tell you what it was, gentlemen. I have a the older I get, the more curious I get. And one of my curiosities lately was when I've done hired staff or hired someone to be on my project team or whatever, more people that I don't know, so let's say staff. What is at the heart of why we like or dislike someone? Kind of on a first impression. And I'll go ahead and answer it for me, and I'd be curious to see what other people say. Kind of the primary things that seem to be out there is one's look, one's age, one's attitude. And I can say for me without hesitation, it's always been for me someone's attitude. How, you know, are they going to be a team player? Do I get a good feeling on how they're going to work with each other, or if I'm looking for a leader, do I get a sense that his or her attitude's leadership qualities in it? To me, it's attitude, and I've always told people, even when someone has said, well, why did you hire me? I don't have half the qualifications you're looking for. When they got bold enough, I had someone ask me that, and I said, you have the right attitude. I can teach you everything else. And so attitude for me is by far on the top of the list. And I was wondering what some of you might think.
Oh, I definitely agree with you. And I'd rather have a person with a great attitude and not even be as intelligent as someone else, just because you're right. You can help that person. They're positively oriented, and you can help them to get to the location and place they need to be. If you have a poor attitude, I do not want to be around you. If you are on my team and I'm in charge of that team, then you're going to be traded off the team. All right?
Yep.
Because I don't want a poor attitude to infect the other personnel that are on that team.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much I agree with you guys. You know, your attitude, as I was talking, your attitude determines your health. So if you have a positive attitude and you are approachable, you know, a lot of people, they don't like to be around you. Now, who wants to be around a person that's, you know, grumpy and, you know, just mad at the world? So I agree 100% with that. That's so true.
All right, can you hear me?
You guys hear me?
Yes, David.
Hello? Okay, I came in through another way because my system went down. But
yeah, we carried on without you, David.
I know, I can hear. And I'm kind of lost where everyone is, so keep going. Don't let me stop you.
No,
we were talking about attitude.
Yeah.
Okay.
We were talking about what's at the core for you, David, or anyone that's listening. What's at the core of first off, what makes you like or dislike someone, say you're hiring staff or something. And I had said for me, the one by far on the top of the list is your attitude. And several of the others agreed with that. And I wondered if anyone else has a different top of the list trait other than attitude.
Okay.
Well, the other thing I meant, you know, you mentioned attitude, and I would give that as a top check. I mentioned being courteous on there, and that's a must also. And that's developed because if you are someone makes a mistake, and then you make fun of them. Let's just put it that way. You make fun of them, that I'm not going to work for you, even in the military. And it's hard for other people to work for you if you're laughing at someone, and that's being discourteous.
Do you think a lot of people take that approach because they feel, unfortunately, they for them to feel more important or better or whatever word you want to use, they have to cut somebody else down? I'd like to think that that's becoming less and less of a trait, but what do you think?
Well, let me just say this. In my life, I ran into a person. I had volunteered to go to this particular, it was a battleship, and I'm a submarine guy by trade, and I happened to met the number two person because I was doing a retirement ceremony for an individual, and the actual guy, the number two person, made fun of me because I was in my uniform and everybody else was in civilian clothes. Well, you know, I had volunteered to go to this. I didn't have to go to this particular ship, but I had volunteered to do that out of patriotism. And now I had someone that I was going to supposedly work for that didn't have, you know, the skill set they should have had in that position. And so I ended up not going to that job. That ship actually had an explosion with 30 days later where they killed a significant number of people. So in my mind, is if you do not establish in the military, if you do not establish the right type of mindset, and that includes what you just discussed and I just discussed, those two faculties, with a can-do attitude, a positive attitude, and respect for your fellow person, then you got all kinds of other things going on that are not good for the accomplishment of your mission. You don't have people working in unison. On this particular ship that blew up, there were some people that weren't following the book and the mix of their explosives, and they were doing it off on their own tangent without the knowledge of the total organization. So they weren't being a team set. And you can foster that type of attitude. I mean, one of my jobs was to go out at different organizations and observe this, go to see what these particular ships and units and observe how they interacted with each other, those components in part, and why their performance was so good or why their performance wasn't up to standards.
Yeah.
And so you can generally, you can hear the griping and everything. When you make fun of people, that generally comes back to haunt the performance of the organization. When you're courteous to people and people think that you put them first, then they'll really go out and try to perform for you.
Yeah.
They'll do anything. They'll stay up all night to work for you. But when you're not nice or good to them, they'll go home early when the job is incomplete and things like that.
Yep. And to that point, and then I'll shut up. I'm taking too much airtime here. But I want to illustrate something that you just said to that point. Early in my career, I had a job that I took on that was in trouble. I'm a civil engineer by trade, and I took on a project because I wanted to make an impression to my boss. And I said, I'd take it if you let me pick my team. He let me pick my team. When it was all done, everybody bought in. We all had created an environment where everybody's input mattered. And at the very end, I took $100 and gave everybody a nice crisp $10 bill with a handwritten note and said I really appreciated their effort and the team. We all looked good, and I made sure all of their bosses knew that they were involved. In other words, I stepped back and pushed them forward. For the 20 years I worked for that company, I never had a problem anybody wanting to work on a team I was on after that. And that was just a little gesture. It was nothing big. But it illustrates how something that small can be that big to other people.
All right, gentlemen, let me jump in right quick and tell you that I'm noticing that a couple of the calls are dropping. Mine, I don't know how. I got the studio, and my studio dropped out, and I'm noticing that a couple of other calls dropped out. So just in case you guys get dropped, I think it's our system, and it might be that it's coming in from the we're coming in from the East Coast, so.
Right, yeah, the weather.
I just got an error message on my computer that says there is a problem going on, and please do this, okay? So let's just keep going, but just in case you get dropped out, I know those calls are dropping off the list here. But we only have 9 minutes and 35 seconds left, so let me ask this one question, and let's just jump in that while we're still, because I'm on the phone, so instead of through the studio. But here's the question I have for people. Let's think about this question for a second. If you had like one day to live, what would you do? So I thought about if I had one day to live, what is it I would do? And I thought I would probably call the people I love to tell them. And it depends on what it was. Was it just me leaving or all of us leaving? So if it was just me leaving, I would just call them to tell them how much I appreciate them or love them or whatever, and go about my business. What would you guys do? I think there's only like two or three of us left online here. I think, Mr. Wiggins, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Okay, sir, if you had one day left, what would you do?
I would probably do what you just said. I would first contact the people that are close friends and relatives and let them know that I love them. And I appreciate them being such a major impact in my life. And then from that day forth, every person I ran into, I'd probably stop them and say, hey, I love you, and you can't do nothing about it.
Random acts of love.
What would you do? What would you do, Bruce?
I'm with the rest of my buddies here. I mean, for me, it's all about family and the people that, and not only family, others that you love as well. The ones that you love the most, you want to make sure they know that. And maybe a few others that you haven't contacted in a while, but it still comes down to family and close friends and whatever else, partners, that you want them to know how you feel before you're gone.
Right. Frank, are you still there? What would you do?
I would do what you all just said, but I would also make sure I gave away all my stuff. Sometimes you see stuff that you have and you know who it should be going to. And if I had that opportunity, I would certainly defund myself while I was living so that when I checked out of here, I wouldn't have any baggage, that I had to carry with me. And I would also pray. I'd get rid of my stuff after calling the people like you all indicated and just telling them, the time that I had with them that was enjoyable, and thanking them for supporting me as a human and putting up with me as well. And then I would make sure that I got rid of all my stuff, and then I would say a prayer. I would say a prayer, and here I am, Lord. Okay.
Take me now.
That's right.
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
Gotta go. Gotta
you?
Go.
How about you, David?
I think praying is one of the things I would do, but like Frank said, but I would, call the people that I am most in love with or love, and, tell them things. And I would probably, Frank brings up a good thing. I'd probably give each one something to remember me by. And then the question would come up, why are you giving me this? And then I would have to tell them, but I wouldn't really want to tell them. I'm just sending you something because I don't live anywhere near my immediate family, so I would just I would go to the post office and send off packages.
Sending
to people.
I would make sure it's also a happy moment. I mean, I'm talking about where I am in life now, so. I would certainly not want to make it a sad moment either. That it was a happy moment, a thankful moment, and just like it'd be like winning the football game. The game's over. We won the game. Let's celebrate the life that we had together.
Yeah.
Right. There is about 6 minutes. Not less. No, it's 5 minutes left on the show. But I wanted let's go back to a relationship question. Valentine's Day is coming up. Now, I have worked in places where the secretary, and I was surprised that the secretaries believe that, and a lot of women believe that Valentine's Day is a day that men give presents to women. And I was explaining to this young lady a few years back that, no, Valentine's Day is a day of love. If you love your husband or whatever, you should give him a gift too. And she had to ask the other women. And there were very few of them that actually agreed with that. I was very surprised to find that.
Really?
Very few women in this office, which was in Texas, in a Boy Scouts of America office, actually, and the women believed that it was for Valentine's Day is when men tell women they love them. And I thought, and I said, well, that's a day of love for both sides. And it opened up, and actually, I thought I did some good that day because they it was like 2 days before, and they were all talking about what they were going to get. And I was like, well, what are you going to give your husband or significant other? They were like, huh? We don't give them anything. But by the time I left, they were all giving their, so the men only get only something because that was, they had to all go out and buy gifts for their men.
Wow.
After that conversation. But what do you think about that? And I don't know that it's changed a lot over the years. And I was surprised to find that. But even today now, when I get close to Valentine, I ask that question. And I find a lot of women still believe that Valentine's Day is a day for women, and men are supposed to give women gifts on that day. That if you ask that question, you might be surprised how many women will say, oh, wow, yeah, that's the way it's supposed to be.
Well,
if
the scale was tilted at all, I guess it would be tilted at least slightly towards the female end. But I like you, David, taught from early on, both my mom and dad, they treated Valentine's Day to each other. So I learned from example from the very beginning that it involved both, like you said, a day of love and hearts on the sleeve and all of that.
Right. Mr. Wiggins, what do you think?
I think Valentine's Day is a day where you're just supposed to give it to not only people of male or female, just people that you love in general. Mainly females are more my part because I like women better than I like men. But it's just a day to show love, in my opinion.
Yeah,
but I guess the question is it a day that men, do women in your surroundings give gifts to men? If I didn't give, if you didn't give your wife a gift, would she give you a gift? And I know your wife, of course she would, but I'm saying general.
Yeah.
In general.
Yeah, well, I mean,
in your church, that's a good question. In your church, which is a big church, do you think the women are giving all their men gifts on Valentine's Day?
Yes, because they know the value of love. Yeah,
okay.
I mean, you don't have to be male or female to show love.
No. I think that it's a day to, because I remember, for all my kids and everything, on Valentine's Day, I always gave them something. Cause it's a day to show people that you care for them. So, in my opinion, but obviously that opinion was changed a lot when I started asking the question. And I found it was an age thing too, but I think the younger girls kind of feel that way also that I get. And I don't see like when we grew up, everybody had Valentine cards. Everybody would go and buy those little cards, and everybody gave all the people cards. But I don't see that going on a lot anymore.
Well, Dave, you're getting older, Dave. That's what it is.
No. Even in the schools. I mean, I guess I see the cards in the stores, but I don't see little kids carrying bunches of cards to school to give to all the kids like we used to.
No. I've heard some grade schools say, oh, we don't do that because the ones that don't get enough or they're not even will be offended. And I'm going, really? Come on.
Well, I can tell you that I can tell you for me, Valentine was one of the most important days in my school life. Valentine's Day,
right?
And I can tell you that you know, I was the only kid to look like me living in Alaska, and I had a lot of thought process before we got to Valentine's Day, whether I was going to be somebody's Valentine, okay?